Fangoria has been at it for over 40 years and is better than ever. This magazine is not only gorgeous, it's highly collectible and delivered right to your front door four times a year. Each issue is filled to the brim with articles exploring every nook and cranny of genre filmmaking, past, present, and future, with all the most exciting journalists, filmmakers, and horror know-it-alls to guide the way, including your intrepid KingCast hosts. This high-quality writing will only ever appear within the physical pages of the magazine, so if you want to join in on the fun, you'll need to subscribe. And to do that, all you got to do is head on over to Fangoria.com and sign up. And guess what, babies? If you use the code KingCast at checkout, you will save a whopping astronomical, massive 25% off of your subscription.
Well done, Eric. Let's get on with the show.
Hi. My name is Stephen King.
The ice is gonna break!
Advice
when
I go see a dead body.
Well, sometimes that is better.
Hello and welcome back to the KingCast on the Fangoria Podcast Network. My name's Scott Wampler.
And I'm Eric Vespi.
And we are your hosts. Our guest today is an accomplished writer, editor, and video game expert whose work you may have read at Games Radar or Jezebel or on the digital pages of Kotaku, where she retains the illustrious title of senior editor. She's here today to join us for what we expect will be a very entertaining thought experiment, one which will challenge Vespi, myself, and our lovely guest to create our own Stephen King video game. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the KingCast stage, Ms. Alyssa Mercante. How are you doing today?
I am so good. I'm so jazzed up. I'm very excited to be here, and I hope I don't let anybody down.
You're not going to let anyone down. I want to.
We're sending this directly to Stephen King, by the way.
So. Yeah, and your dad. Those in that order.
Listening to it, he's prepared. He's ready.
Yeah. So I'd like to start by paying you a compliment. For many years, I worked at a website that had its fair share of scandals or caused, you know, a lot of drama with its opinions. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of yelling, getting yelled at by the crowd. And I think that Kotaku takes a lot of shit and you guys handle it very well. And you in particular seem very graceful about it. I know that, you know.
Thank you. I can be a little bit of a bitch, but
that's allowed.
Sometimes have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not anything to apologize for. You know, fucking.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The internet is a scary place and people are opinionated.
Fuck yeah, they are.
That's a Stephen King opinion. You know, that's right at the forefront of Dolores Claiborne. Sometimes being a bitch is all a woman's got.
There you go.
Very true.
And I've always loved the way that man writes women. So.
How, what is day to day, like, what would you say the level of drama is that you're having to deal with?
Oh, like, well, I kind of describe working at my website as, getting it from both angles and not in the fun way. because you're never pleasing, the audience who either thinks that you're too left or not left enough.
Right.
Which is wild. And then we're also getting, you know, almost endless pressure from the lovely people who own Geo Media, who
right.
seem determined to run digital media into the ground and piss on its corpse. So it's kind of constant barrage of a dry January was the most difficult thing I've ever done.
Yeah, so, I bet.
If that puts it into perspective for you.
Dry January should be canceled until like the world calms down. I think.
You know, yes.
It should have been over and done with in 2020. Like, no more of that. We have another friend that works over at IO9, and it seems like the stress that y'all have to deal with because of the owners is unreal. Like,
it's crazy. Truly, I am not paid enough, especially living in New York City. I'm like, what am I doing?
Right. Huh.
Yeah,
Vespi, do you have the anything whole, you want to contribute?
Just that, you know, the whole blogging world is in such a dire straits right now. Like, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to, like, every time we have a blogger on or, you know, somebody who makes their living writing about pop culture online, it always seems to me that we always end up in the same discussions. Just like, how much longer is this shit going to go? Because it doesn't feel like it's got that much. much longer to go. So I don't want to make it a bummer discussion, but you know, but just having had my tippy toes in, you know, the Slash Film world where Static Media, you know, bought out Slash Film, it was great when I got hired because I got like paid fairly good money, you know, hourly to write about movies. But it was that thing that I've seen happen a lot, which is this money comes in, there's like a big rush to hire a bunch of really smart people, or me in the case of Slash Film. you know, they hire some of the best people that are out there and they pay them, you know, a decent amount for what they do. And then like within months it goes, cool, well, can you do that? You know, do all the normal stuff that you're doing that you're excited about writing. And then throw in this top 10 list, right? Just throw in this top 10 list of this. And then it's like, and then a few months go by and it goes, okay, so the top 10 list and the ending explains have to be the predominant thing that you guys are covering because that's what's getting clicked. But don't worry, you can still write about your passion stuff here. Until like when I was ultimately laid off from Slash Film, like we were getting to the point where like I was struggling shift to shift. There would be 200 stories on the board, but like I was struggling finding anything that I felt like I could have any angle on, for one, and for two, that wasn't just the ending of Jaws explained. And it's just like the shark blows up. I don't know what you need me to write about that.
It's very much that. It's almost like, and I'm not really good with money, but it's almost like someone determining that news should be profitable is a bad thing. But I still don't understand 401ks, so I guess I probably shouldn't be the person speaking to that.
Right.
Yeah, it's rough. Well, it's rough out there.
Yeah, it is.
It's rough, but I am employed. The song of the century, truly.
Yeah, for real, for real. We got our jobs. You know, everyone in power is.
We did it, Joe.
Yeah. let's change gears. Before we get into your Stephen King origin story, I'm curious if what your favorite game last year was.
Mm. Ooh, last year, it's actually perfectly appropriate for this conversation. It was Alan Wake 2 for sure.
Oh
yeah, I'm
that game whips.
It's so fucking good.
I'm already not nervous that oh yeah, yeah. I'm already nervous that every one of our angles is going to be sharing some Alan Wake DNA now.
Oh, basically, yeah. I mean, how could you not pull from, you know, you just kind of have to. Although late in the year started to almost pull away ahead of Alan Wake for me was Baldur's Gate 3. That game also whips. And sucked up a lot of my time. So those were my two big ones.
I didn't play Baldur's Gate 3. The other one I did spend a lot of time with last year was Tears of the Kingdom. I spent like 4 months up in Idaho, just basically sitting in a room, long story. And but I had that game and fucking
hell. He was
in
prison.
I played that thing. I played that thing like till there was nothing left to do. You know, just what a fucking sandbox to play in, that thing was.
Oh, I love that. That's why I kind of am, I'm kind of fear starting those games because I know the sort of player that I am, where I'm very much a completionist and I will go to every corner and do everything. And then the next thing I know, it's 5 a.m. and I've burnt down 2 joints and I'm like, oh, shit, what was I doing this whole time? I haven't made any like headway in the main campaign. I'm just sticking around. Yeah. So I do love games like that.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't get, I feel very left out. I have a Switch. I barely use it. I played the last Zelda game, which I was like, and I kind of got into it. But this one, like I bought it right before a big, I went to New Zealand. And so I'm like, perfect. I'm going to need, there's, you know, that's a day's worth of being in the air. So, you know, let's go ahead and load that up. And I played it and I fucking just the controls. I felt old. I felt, you know, that time when you get old enough where you're like, I can't grasp the whole creating a, you know,
really
an invisible thing to catapult me across this cat. Like for whatever reason, like I couldn't make that jump and I'm like, fuck, I'm hitting that barrier now where I'm too old to understand mechanics of some of these fucking games.
No, I think a lot of people struggle with that. And that's not like my cup of tea either. As I learned like a couple of months ago that I can't picture things. Like that's just not how my brain works. I'm not like really good at painting things in my head. And sometimes, yeah, what it has to do with like building something, I am annoyingly painfully obtuse. It just doesn't. And then I get frustrated.
Yeah.
See, I didn't have a problem with the controls. In fact, I'm surprised to hear you say that, Vesby, because I thought they were pretty intuitive. But I say that, but I also was terrible at building things. Mm. Like, I could build a very basic car and attach, like, jets or fucking whatever to the right. back of it. But, like, I would see videos online of, like, the shit people were building, and I was like, what the fuck? Where are you finding the time?
It was engineering degree level shit. Yeah.
Crazy Rube Goldbergy and just like crazy shit, you know? And I'm like, it's a platform with four wheels on it. And if I put the stick here, I get to drive it. Like that's as good as I could get with it.
That worked. I think it was like an early, what do you call them? They're vaults or tombs or whatever the fuck that you're exploring, where it's kind of teaching you how to do it. And it literally took me 30 minutes to build a bridge across a chasm because the fucking plank kept falling over the side and shit. And I'm just like, what the fuck is, like, what am I doing wrong? I'm placing it where it's wanting me to place it and it's just falling. I'm like, I don't understand. And so I gave up on that one pretty quickly. I almost had to give up on Baldur's Gate 3 too, because I got in a little over my head early on, and to that game's credit, it's not very on rails. So it just kind of dumps you where you are, and then you can figure out wherever the fuck you want to go from there. I did that without pulling two members of the party that you're supposed to pull right on the beach.
Yep.
And so I'm like playing the main storyline, and I'm like in this goblin castle where it's like I talked my way in, and I'm like, oh, this is great. And then I realize I'm way under level for what I'm doing in there. And then I get trapped in there, and I'm like doing these 45 minute long battles where I'm like running away into healing and then coming back and like doing all this other shit. And I'm talking to my friends about it. I'm like, this is really difficult. And I have it on like the easiest story setting or whatever. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong here. And they're like, oh, well, just, you know, have your wizard do this. And I was just like, wizard? What wizard? Like, you didn't pull your wizard? Like, what about the hot vampire? I'm like, what hot vampire? I never met a hot vampire. And so, like, I realized I'd gone in with, like, half my team. But then I felt like I was kind of stuck in there because I couldn't even get out without the army of goblins attacking me at the end. But when I realized that I could fast travel out, and then I gathered my group, and suddenly that didn't become as much of a problem. But
that's a huge,
I do that with open world games like that
issue.
I can go too far. Yeah.
Yeah. My friend didn't grab Shadowheart, which she was like talking to me about it and going, yeah. And then this, me and this one girl, I'm like, one girl, what about the other one? The really hot one in the pod? She's like, I didn't get her. I'm like, you need her. You got to go get her. Go find her.
I haven't played Baldur's Gate 3, but I like it when games do that, you know? I remember the first time I played Demon's Souls. I wasn't that far into it, but I had, like, you know, caused a number of characters to appear in, the Nexus in that one? And, you know, like your hub area, right? And very early on, I went up to one of them and like he gave me some sort of sass. And this is the first time I've ever played a From Software game. So I like killed the guy. And then not too much later than that, I was like stuck on a part. And I was like looking up, you know, tips on what to do or some shit. And it was like, well, you're going to want to use magic here. I think it might have had something to do with the fucking prison level. At any rate, I was like, it turned out the person that I killed was the one that could sell me magic or some shit like that. And I was like, oh my fucking God. So now I'm just like going through here with like a fucking broadsword that, you know, is going to break at any second. Or wait, did they even have breakable weapons in that game?
I don't think so.
It's been a while.
I notoriously hate From Soft games until I played Elden Ring. And I was like, wait, you're letting me kind of go get a little stronger before I get like mollywopped by some guy. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan, but I'm a fucking masochist, I guess. Like when you finally like beat the thing that's just been whooping your ass for hours, like I don't know why that doesn't frustrate me enough to quit, because there's a lot of like way less frustrating things that I will immediately walk away from. but I will play those games. It doesn't really make sense to me, but I do love them.
I know that there's this back and forth on a thought on video games where there's the thought of you don't want to make your character so powerful that everything's easy, because that's when people lose interest in games. But to me, that's like what I love building towards. And maybe that's just my exposure to these open world or RPG kind of games was Fallout 3. And that was the first time I'd played anything like that. And I just fucking loved it being like, oh my God, it's a struggle to struggle. But okay, now I'm kind of matched. And then by the time you're getting power armor, you're getting your unique weapons and shit. Then I love that the back quarter of that game is you going, all right, motherfuckers, bring it on. I can walk into anything. Right?
Yeah, I think that's great.
I love that feeling. And I know a lot of games are really hesitant to let you do that these days, especially these open world ones, because I guess they're worried that people will go get too powerful, you know, on side missions or something. And then there's no challenge for the rest of it. But I don't know. I miss like building a character up to be the guy or lady, depending on which character I'm running, you know, that'll run into any situation and be like, you know, cool, I can handle pretty much anything this thing throws at me. You know,
I like that in
Skyrim too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think of like, I always think of like Force Unleashed when you're just like absolutely OP, Jedi powers and Sith powers where you're like, you know, spit roasting dudes and like multiple throwing around people. Right. That's great stuff. I like that. I guess the thing is like, you know, making me work for it to be that powerful. But sometimes I'm like, I don't want to work for it to be that powerful. I just want to be that powerful.
Well, you could do things like have dangle different, you know, like, okay, great. You're powerful enough to go do this thing now that'll get you the perfect role on the armor that you want or the perfect role on this weapon. Borderlands can be addicting in that way too, where there's a slot machine element of what I can beat this big boss and maybe I'll get this super crazy random role on this
gun
and stuff, you know, like there's ways for them to do that. But, we could get even more in the weeds on video game theory here, but I think it might be a good time to kick off the episode in earnest. So I guess the basic idea here is that we're all going to pitch our.
Oh, wait, we got to get a list of Stephen King origins.
Oh, yeah. We got to get the origin
my
story.
Origin story.
Let's get that out of the way, and then we'll jump into the meat of the episode. Okay.
It's all comes down to my dad, Big Mike Marcante. I believe the first book that I read was like bizarrely The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon.
Okay.
How old were you?
I think I was like 12.
Well, that makes sense.
About the age of the girl 13. In the book, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
maybe a little younger, but yeah.
Yeah. My dad had, it was before the picture book came out. And I think the picture book. Yeah. I think that came out in like 2004, maybe. So I read it before that. And my dad just like had every Stephen King book ever. And he was like so Stephen King pilled. He like said he read like, I think Night Shift in high school and then like immediately bought The Shining. And then it was like from there. I mean, he's got all these crazy first editions, like that crazy box set of The Green Mile.
Oh yeah.
When they were like releasing and like, you know, the little tiny paperbacks.
Yeah.
When I read The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon and I was like, it's not that scary. And then I wanted to read more. So I think I went from that to Cujo, which was the jump.
Yeah.
And then I read Christine Cujo, it all within like the first year or so of me reading. Wow. I was like I was a pretty voracious, like I was a, you know, a reading ahead of my level when I was that age. So probably maybe shouldn't have read some of those things, but also didn't really retain a lot of it because I was fucking 12.
right.
And then from there, it was just like whatever I could grab off the shelf when I used to still live at home and like have to commute into the city from Long Island and sit on the Long Island Railroad, I would grab. So I just kind of made my way through pretty much everything that he had, which is all of the Stephen King. And it's just always been like a center point my dad got me into reading and he got me into reading through Stephen King and then Harry Potter too. But that's just how it has been my entire life. Every time he sees anything about Stephen King, he sends it to me. And He has all of these awesome old versions of books that he's like, maybe I'll buy the new one so that you don't read this on the train and spill coffee on it. And I'm like, probably a good idea. These are collectibles. He sent me the picture of his Green Mile paperbacks when I texted him yesterday. And I was like, cool, Dad. And he's like, how many people got the bookmark too? And he's got
the bookmark. I remember them. Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's something that I've been running into now with my girlfriend Kels. Like, she's wanting to read some of these, you know, books and stuff, where I'm telling her, like, oh, we have an episode coming up on this or whatever. And I'm just like, well, don't read that one. That was the first edition. So let me order you a book.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a limited run signed by King, and maybe don't touch that one.
Yeah, maybe don't bring that one.
Do you happen to know what your dad's favorite King book is?
Oh, his favorite King book is The Stand.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Solid pick.
Yeah, The Stand. I think his term, his answer to me when I asked him was, it's basically COVID. And I'm like, okay, why does that, I'm not going to ask why that's your favorite, but okay, sure. And it's strange because my dad's not a horror. I would never say that my dad is a horror guy. Like, he doesn't go see horror movies unless they're like Stephen King adjacent. And he doesn't read anything else that's even remotely horror adjacent. And it's really strange that, like, I guess you're just really impressionable when you're young, and he really liked the way Stephen King writes, and he just latched onto it and was like, I love this shit. And I'm like, you don't watch anything scary.
Right.
It's so funny that that became his thing, because he's not a horror dude at all.
Yeah, my dad's like super straight laced, you know, he goes to church on Sundays, he sings in the choir, just old school in his values. He's a fucking, he's like 70 now, I think. This man had no imagination. He's ever in his life, I don't think, you know, love him to death. But like, you know, it's whenever I hear people talking about their dads being like really into Stephen King, I immediately like try to map that onto my own dad, and it's so fucking weird, because like that guy, like, he watches like three movies: Lawrence of Arabia, Top Gun, and I don't know what the other one is. Fucking the one with Jeff Bridges and the sailboat, and the like the crew of
the sailboat.
It's like Jeff Bridges and it's a bunch of kids like on a yacht, and White Squall. Yeah. Like, he watches those three movies, owns them in every format, and he has only ever read books about World War II, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that sounds like my mom. My mom tried to like pick up Harry Potter because my dad and me and my sister were all reading them at the same time and like tandem with each other while they were coming out. And she was just like, I can't, the names and the who's the, what do you mean they're magical? Like, she just couldn't. So it was always like my dad being that person, while my mom was like, I don't want to watch this. This is stupid. Can we put on the, what's the movie with Matthew McConaughey and Jennifer Lopez? Like, that's all she watched.
It's interesting that he's not a horror guy besides, I think.
It is. And also my dad is in some ways similar to your dad. My dad was raised very, very conservatively. He's a Roman Catholic, Italian cop from Long Island.
No, good Lord.
So his Stephen King, like him liking, he's actually grown a lot as an adult, like being out of the force. Like, I've heard he's talked more openly about understanding, you know, the problematic nature of being in the NYPD in the 90s. Right. And I think part of the reason why he has been able to grow is because he's such a voracious reader, and he reads people like Stephen King. And then he hears what Stephen King, who he values more than anything in the world, say, you know, something like Donald Trump bad. And my dad's like, well, I trust this guy, you know, trust this guy, maybe Donald Trump bad. So it's kind of nice to see that, that imagination helps.
And one thing that I'll also throw in there, and King's politics, at least social politics, work their way into his books a lot, which always makes me fucking laugh whenever we get our one star reviews going, I don't want to listen to politics on my Stephen King show. It's like, it's in the fucking books, my man. Is like, what else are we gonna what are we gonna do? Yes, we agree we're lefties over here, but like, and we agree with his politics, but you know, I don't understand this, like being a conservative fan of Star Trek. It's just like, how do you even like this thing? But what I will say is that I think that your dad, having read a lot of King, probably it it opened up his empathy, his sensors a little bit more, because King, one thing that we can all agree on, whether you like his politics or not, is King is very good at putting you in the mindset of the characters that he's writing about. So sometimes it's the main character, sometimes it's a one-off character who just shows up and delivers eggs to the protagonist as they're sitting in a diner, but we still get her whole backstory, right? It's like he's really good at giving us that, and so many of his characters are the ones who are bullied and, you know, put down upon, and they're not in positions of power, and they find ways to do that. And I think by you know, his natural default setting in writing, like, he's getting all that kind of social politics through there. And I think it opens up a lot of people. Ebert called movies empathy machines. I think novels can be the same way. So
100%. Yeah. Thanks, so Stephen King. You made my dad a lefty.
Shout out to
kind of.
Shout out to Big Mike. Yeah,
he's gonna be so excited.
Okay, so let's talk about what we've come here to talk about.
Yeah,
hell yeah, brother.
The idea here was, you know, we would each pick a different Stephen King title. Vespi has already disregarded that rule and is doing something a little different. You've got to pair that with a certain kind of game and basically pitch what this game would be like to play.
Right.
Alyssa, you are our guests. Why don't you go first?
Oh, hell yeah. No pressure. I have to point out that this was made by bouncing ideas off of my fiance, who is the reason why I have even remotely good taste in movies in my later years. He got me through all of Carpenter's films when we were first dating, and I was like, why have I not seen any of this?
Good man.
I'm thinking, he's a good dude. We'll keep him. It's kind of like The Shining / Dr. Sleep, so I guess I sort of also ignored the prompt, but it's survival horror meets action adventure game set entirely in the Overlook Hotel. I would say that the title could maybe be The Shining : Overlook Hotel, but I'm not sure.
Why not I think just Overlook just Shining, Hotel?
Yeah, it could just be that too, because then people might be like, what is, oh, I don't know what this is, and buy it anyway. And then they're like, hey, it's a Stephen King thing. We hid it in here. And basically, it's kind of doing what Flanagan does with Sleep, just in the sense that, like, it's pulling from everything, so the both sources in terms of adaptation wise, the books and the movies, and it's Danny returning to the Overlook as an adult, newly sober, trying to just at the behest of a therapist come to terms with, you know, what happened there, what was actually memories that he dreamt up in a drunken stupor, what actually happened. And as you're in the hotel, you know, booting everything back up and kind of breaking and entering a little and walking around, you can basically encounter some like Jedi Fallen Order-esque memories that are there that when he touches them and encounters them, he's transported back to the Overlook when he was there and he's a kid again.
That's cool.
And that every time you complete one of those little mini kind of missions in there, you unlock a new kind of like ability with your Shining, which will then let you further explore inside the hotel, defeat the odd boss or so, one of which may or may not be your father. And kind of, I just wanted it to feel like this really big, scary building that some things are outright flashbacks that Danny's, you know, in experiencing from back in the day. Some things are just echoes and hints of something. Maybe you hear voices, like the ballroom's full of people and then you walk in and it's empty, like really freaky stuff like that. All with like small Resident Evil kind of style, like boot up the generator, make sure the power's on,
right,
be careful of the furnace kind of shit going around, with the goal being, you know, come to terms with what happened here, kill your dad. Maybe Rose the Hat has been following you and you have to kill her at the end, and that's the actual surprise big bad kind of vibe is what I'm thinking.
I'm into this.
Are you using the Kubrick iconography, or are you using something wholly original that's more in line with the book, do you think?
Well, I feel like the Overlook Hotel in the book is obviously, it's big in the movie too, right? It's like 110 rooms, guest suites, ballroom, banquet room, right. Lounge. So I would love to have that space feel as expansive as it's like described almost immediately then. But I think it's kind of a hybrid. Yeah, I think I want there to be some things that visually would, people would go, oh, fuck that maze, you know, like that kind of shit. Right. But I do want it to feel like people who love the book can go, oh, yeah. Oh, fuck. That's cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've got the suites set up here on the, like, it would actually be set up the way that it's described to Jack in the beginning, you know, on the east side, there's this and that kind of stuff, I think is how I would want it to be. And I'd love it to open very similarly to how Alan Wake opens, Alan Wake 2, with Danny kind of driving up
with a naked hotel. Man.
Oh yeah, that'd be rad.
Yeah, stopping in Sidewinder at like a fucking, you know, grab and go shop to get like a snack and having that like feeling of like, ooh, I really want to grab some fucking booze and not grabbing any booze and going up there anyway. Like that kind of meandering up the hills, freaky music playing until you get there kind of vibe. And then you're just, you're just trying to get your way through this hotel without getting killed by your dad.
Basically. I'm imagining that when you have the flashback scenes, the game basically does like that thing that one level in Titanfall 2 did where it like.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, you're in the decrepit overlook, but when you flip over like that, now it's like the resplendent version of it, you know?
Yes, literally that. So you can play, you can have like essentially a second map on top of it, which would look, you know, really, really cool, I think, and just be visually striking and kind of have, you know, this like, it's survival horror when you're in those flashback sequences, like purely survival horror because you're a kid. So I want that feeling of like terror to be very apparent. But then the payoff is that now you have like new shining abilities and whether that helps you like get into the basement or, you know, like unlock something memory wise that you wouldn't have without it. That's kind of the vibe that I'm thinking of. It helps with exploration. It pushes you forward by being able to complete these scary things. And then like, the kind of sort of pseudo final boss is, in my mind, very similar to Kubrick visually, just in the sense that it's like kid flashback. You're approaching your dad in the massive room on the typewriter. And he starts chasing you around the hotel. And I kind of want it to be like as if I'm making this in my mind, it's getting made. I want it to be like, you know, he comes back into adult Danny body as, you know, the actual also there in the flesh or sort of ghost speak of Jack is like swinging an axe at him and it goes through the wall past his head. And he's like, oh fuck, I actually might die. And that kind of like, how do you defeat this man? I haven't decided if it's through the power of love or just acceptance and having to beat him, thinking that it's over, giving everyone that sense of like, Danny did it, relief. You know, he figured out his shit with his dad. And then like Rose the Hat kicks in the door and she's like, bitch, I can hear your shining from Cabo. I've been chasing you. You know, that kind of thing.
Is That's this first person?
I think it has to be. Like, did you play Resident Evil? I think it's Village. Did you play Village?
Yeah.
So for the reason why I think first person makes the most sense is because I always think that, and I think you can have some hallucinatory stuff with this too in the flashbacks. There's that scene where he's going to like jumpstart, I think, or like kick a generator over in Resident Evil Village and then someone just cuts his hand off.
Yes.
Like out of nowhere, you're like, you see the hand, it's pulling down the lever and all of a sudden fucking hatchet comes and cuts this dude's hand off. And he's screaming and it's like still attached to the handle and it's so visceral and terrible. And I think it has to be, I think it has to be first person. I also think it would help with like, if it was third person, I think it'd be a little jarring to go from like, you know, 6 foot tall dude to like pulling back and seeing a little kid. And I think in first person, you can kind of ape that height different. Like it won't matter as much the height difference.
Right. Yeah. You get a little bit of that. Well, I think it's BioShock 2, right? Where you get to play as a little sister at a certain point. Yeah. And the perspective changes. Yeah. You can get that. I could also see there being a fun way to throw in some, what's it called? Eternal Darkness. Like things where you're getting like real life. Are you going insane as well? Like, is your TV shutting itself off? Nope. It was the game making it look like that happened, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. 100%. And if you paint it as like it being so recently after he's gotten sober, right. And he's been you know, pushing down his abilities by drinking, then I think, yeah, that painting it as how much of this is like the fucking DTs versus how much of this is me actually feeling this, and that question being like posed the entire time, it would be really fun too. The unreliability of that narrator, I think, would be really fun.
Yeah. I know you said
I think it could be really fun.
It takes place entirely within the Overlook, but my one note would be, I would try to work like a level in there, for lack of a better term, where, or at least a set piece, where you are able to go outside and maybe encounter the hedge animals from the book.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess you could do the maze, but I fucking feel like maze levels are never as interesting as the games seem to think they are. I think I would rather battle.
No, I don't think they are.
You know, giant.
Yeah. Hedge animals rabbits. Would be fucking sick. That would actually, that's a great idea. That would be sick. Like, that would be super cool and trippy as hell. And like, ultimately, in my mind, this is a high quality, a single player experience that you only pay for fucking once. And that's rare in gaming now.
Yeah.
And I like that idea. It's just give me like Alan Wake, Stephen King meets Jedi Fallen Order, and I'm happy.
I love this concept, and it's a lot better than what I can imagine somebody else doing with The Shining, or like it might be like an asymmetrical kind of horror game, like
a Dead by Daylight.
You know, like the one player is Jack, and you know, maybe one player is Lloyd the bartender, and fucking there's the blowjob dog guy running around. And then, like, the other players are, I don't know, Danny, Wendy, and, I don't know, a school bus full of kids that just happen to show up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, too, is initially I was like, oh, maybe ASIM. And then I was like, ASIM's too fucking easy and boring. And I think, you know, the whole point of The Shining, and especially Dr. Sleep, is, like, really unpacking, like, familial fucking trauma and, like, and like, you know, inherited violence or mental health shit, and like just making it be like a run away from the man with the hatchet is like, I just think it undermines the shit out of it. So
you could have a fun,
I think,
little,
that would definitely be an easy thing to do.
You could also have like a fun little like fun quote unquote like like the this you know who Preston Garvey is, if I say that name, from fucking Fallout 4.
He's like, we need your help
with these settlements. And he's always in your fucking ear about the settlements.
This
game's version of Preston Garvey can be the boiler, which you have to continually go downstairs and fucking.
That's in my notes. My notes are like, and it's kind of a little bit of a chore. You're kind of annoyed by it, but
I want
it to be that. Like the first two times you go to do it, you're like, this fucking thing. And then like the third time you go to do it, it's essentially the Resident Evil. You get your hand cut off. Like something scares shit out of you. And that payoff of like making gamers get a little bit like, this tedious shit, I can't believe you're making me go do this again. And then scaring the piss out of them. Yeah, that'd be brilliant. And then ultimately I think like, maybe mimic, mirror Dr. Sleep and like blow that motherfucker up would be pretty cool. Yeah. And again, returning to that fucking boiler and being like, I hate this thing, and just being able to just break it would be kind of fun.
We gotta get Mike Flanagan on the horn and get him to bankroll. Yeah,
Intrepid Video Games, their first release.
Yeah. Come on, Mike.
I mean,
you
honestly,
don't have
enough
going on.
Who's making video games now? There's a horror production company.
Blumhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blumhouse, who I know the guy who's running it. That's Zach Wood, Elijah Wood's brother. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna have to hit him up after this with all of our little tight fives.
I'll send him a copy of this and be like, and
games journalism blows dick right now. Any chance you guys want bankroll a Stephen King game?
We don't want to make it. We just want to play it, and you cut us a check for the idea. That's the best. Well, very well done. I think this
I would
play the ever-loving shit out of that game.
You could also have like a prologue. You know how in the first Force Unleashed game, you start playing as Darth Vader, right?
Yes.
And you're like just wrecking shit. And you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then that's like, I'm very disconnected from the gameplay for the rest of the game. imagine you're opening this and you are the guy building the Overlook, and the opening is you like building the Overlook Hotel and building it into the point where like you, that's how it teaches you like what wings, you know, of the, what
the sensorial level
and people dying left and right as they're building it. And yeah, you gotta put the hedge animals over the Indian burial ground, and
it was getting poured into the concrete foundation.
Make there could impact like what the layout of certain places are and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be kind of like Metroidvania ish where, like, you know, the shining powers, you can see you need to get into, I don't know, fucking this part of the hotel, but you can't, like, I can't get into the ballroom until I can flip this switch, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like Jedi Fallen Order, right? Like you get the wall running shit after you do the memory shit, and then you can wall run over to the other thing. And it's
teleport
that kind of thing.
Once you get those
Exactly. Yeah.
And speaking
you can throw
of
your lightsaber.
And speaking of the blowjob dog guy, like what is the name of the guy in the black coat that follows you around in Resident Evil 2? Is that Mr. X?
Yeah.
Like you can't kill him. He just shows up from time to time and you're like, oh
yeah,
fuck.
That's your dad.
That should be the blowjob dog guy. And he's chasing you around the hotel on all fours. It'd be fucking terrifying. Maybe it goes into third person. Goes into third person just for those sequences, you know?
That would be fucking terrifying. And that's the thing that I kind of like, that like random emergent like Resi style gameplay where it's like he's following you, but you don't, he's not doing it all the time. A little bit like Alien Isolation too, where sometimes you'll just be like fuck and have to like go really quiet and hide. I love that. And I love the idea that sometimes, you know, again, unreliably, because he, you know, is dealing with all the shit, like maybe you think that is going to happen like once or twice and it's a fake out. It's just him being a little twitchy. And you know, you're like running down the hallway.
Like he's like peeking around corners.
Yeah, he's panicked. Like you're running, and because you think you see, you know, a dog blowjob guy.
Okay, I got you. I had it backwards in my head. All right, yeah. And I also like the implication, because you don't see like the blowjob dog guy. I can't imagine him like, does he eat you or like kill you? Like the implication, really. I think you should see him first, like, you know, blowing the whatever the guy's name is in the room, right? That should be the first encounter you have with him, and then he chases you, right? And then from then on out, the implication is sort of like, if that blowjob dog guy catches up to me, it's gonna suck my dick. Like that's the threat.
Yeah.
It's
there's
hilarious.
Gotta be a blowjob meter. Yeah. You get sucked too much, then you shrivel up and you die.
He sucks your life out.
This is
truly
a triple
that.
Zach,
a
don't
title.
Listen to this part. This part's not serious. The rest of the part's serious, though. Listen to that.
Yeah, ignore this part. This is a mod. This is a mod. We'll leave it as a moddable.
DLC.
It's moddable.
Yeah.
DLC.
Yeah, you guys can blowjob have fun with DLC. It on Nexus Mods. Yeah, yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. But pre-order for special blowjob guy.
Oh, man.
We laugh, but that would actually fucking
100%.
Fuck, this could have been an entire episode. Vespi, you want to go next?
Sure.
Alyssa, were you done? Did you have anything you want to add?
Oh, I'm done. I'm done. Okay. I'm cooked.
I feel like it's if we keep adding ideas to it, it may, you know, not get made. And I don't want to do that. So.
Yeah, we don't want to jinx it. Yeah.
Right.
Because this is obviously going to get made, clearly.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. Rockstar is on the phone right now.
Yeah, they're scuttling GTA 4, 5, 6, whatever the one they're
six.
On now. They're scuttling 6 now just to make this one.
Just to make the blowjob dog game.
Yeah. Okay, so my thought, like, so Scott told me about this, and I'm like, I think it was put forward, like, we're not, Dark Tower's off the table, right? So,
right.
We're not doing Dark Tower stuff, which is usually my go-to when asked, like, Stephen King video game thing. What my mind turned to was doing Castle Rock as a video game, but doing it very much like just ripping off, you know, as much of Alan Wake 2 specifically as we could possibly do. but where you're going into this town and it, you're just surrounded by, you run into Sheriff Bannerman, you run into, you know, the, you see the Pinto drive by, you know, with Donna and her kid in it. It's like, you know, with the, you run into the guy, you, Johnny Smith, and you run into the Frank Dodd that was ended up being the strangler, you know, like all these things are all happening all in this one area. And it also happens to be like spitting distance from like Ludlow, where Pet Sematary set. It's spitting distance from Derry. So I'm like, well, why don't you just kind of take an Alan Wake style approach where you get to fully walk around these fully formed towns and run into all the, you know, these characters, but like map on kind of an Assassin's Creed or Bethesda style, like giant world where you can ultimately, you know, you can get in the car and you can drive to Derry and then go explore Derry. You could, you know, explore Ludlow. You can explore maybe Little Tall Island, you know, and you essentially get the entire world of Stephen King in this scenario. And it would be really to further rip off Alan Wake. It'd make a whole lot of sense for the main character to be a writer. And kind of finding that he's in his own, or she is in her own Stephen King story as like she's running into, or he's running into, all these Stephen King characters. You know, it could be a really fun, like peeling the layers of reality away and, you know, showing the multiverse that exists, you know, beneath everything, you know, I don't know. But that was the idea that stuck the most out to me was doing not just a single title, but you could have, you know, a Cujo section, you know, you could have your Dead Zone section. Like you can have all these different flavors of King within this one thing, which is kind of what I wanted the Castle Rock TV series when it was announced, what I was kind of hoping it would do. You know, Jerusalem's Lot, like everything is going to be in that area. You know, it's like instead they just kind of just set it as a background without having, you know, they mention Shawshank or whatever, but they don't really, you know, they don't really explore that as like, you know, being around all those Stephen King iconic places and characters. So I think that's what I was drawn to whenever this thought was brought up. So what do you guys think? Is it too broad? Do you think of an idea, or do you think that there's something that could be really
fun? I mean, I feel like this, the like making like a Universal Studios ass Stephen King universe in a game would be like pretty sick for people who really like him.
Yeah.
And also just sick for people who like huge explorable worlds that have variety between the areas.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's always a lot of fun for people, and the kind of realization where even if you don't know Stephen King, you're like, I'm in the rabid dog section now, you know, right. Like that's kind of sick.
Like, and it opens it up having different like levels of seriousness. Like you, what if one of the fucking things you do is you end up on Jordy Verrill's farm and it's all fucking overgrown, you know, it reminds me of the weirder side quests in the early Fallouts, right? Where you could like just stumble upon a living tree, you know, like what happens when you stumble upon Jordy Verrill? Do you help him? Like, can you help him? Or do you just show up and you're like, you find the shotgun that Jordy Verrill blew his brains out with, and suddenly you have a weapon, you know, it's like, you know what I mean? Like there's so many things that you could play with in there that would be very complicated to figure out. But I love the idea of just immersing yourself into Stephen King's Maine, right? And just kind of getting all the little things. You can have a bit in Derry and run into the Adult Losers Club if it's set in the 80s or something, you know, and you run into the Adult Losers Club and, you know, as they're on their mission to, you know, they're having dinner at the Chinese restaurant or something, and you have your own encounter with Pennywise. I mean, like, all this stuff could happen, you know? I don't know.
You just mentioned having an encounter with Pennywise, but like, I would assume that would be like some sort of boss fight, right? So in this game, what are like what sort of random enemies are you encountering in the game world?
It would be really fun to have number one fans, like especially if you're a writer. So you have your different Annie Wilkes that are approaching you as number one fans. Just the random encounters. I don't know. Like I just keep going back to Alan Wake 2 where you're, like he has the shadow people, right? That he has to fight with the flashlight and sometimes gun. You're right. There's got to be something that is that. Maybe it's like guardians of the, you know, say that this is like Thinnies or something around there, you know.
It's got, I mean,
I don't know.
It can be all different kinds of things. You know, you're going to want right. that variety. Like, you could have the little bald doctors from Insomnia running around.
Yeah.
You know, and
hell yeah.
You've got to, like, you're like, you know, I'm picturing it like a random encounter in Grand Theft Auto where, you know, you come across this emergent event, right? Only here yeah. it's somebody getting their life force snipped by like one of the doctors, and you got to right. go intervene, like kick their ass around a little bit. I think, you know, you used Alan Wake as the touchstone here, and yeah. I think, but you also went to like, I guess it's Fallout 3 with the Living Tree, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I think I would like this game more if it looked less like Alan Wake and was closer to like a Fallout game,
the Bethesda style.
Yeah,
yeah.
And in tone, because I think the juxtaposition of genres is what really makes fucking Fallout games work. You know,
right,
it's science
right.
fiction, but it's horror and it's post-apocalyptic, but it's also kind of a dark comedy, and like, you know, there's yep. all that, and there's room for all of that shit with Stephen King stuff.
Sure. I think if I was going to steal anything, that'd be adamant about stealing anything from the Alan Wake thing, was just that feeling that you get after the shit starts going down, but then you're like, you have to go interview people at the diner, and then
yeah.
And you're like walking around the town, and you could just walk into people's backyards and, you know, find little talismans and shit. You know, it's like, I don't know, like, I'd want to keep that aspect of just being able to feel like you're fully immersed in a Castle Rock or something, but I guess you could still get that if you're laying in an open world, you know, kind of giant map
right
thing, where you know Assassin's like, Creed style or something. Yeah
like point tons of POIs. You've also like set yeah. up like kind of the perfect, I mean, the games, the people who own games companies are salivating at the idea of like expansion, you know, to right. like this world that you could yeah. dump on it. It'd be like so easy to add and grow on top yeah, of that.
You could add
Castle Rock, then
yeah. dairy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Dairy, yeah. Salem's
all that
lot.
Stuff would be
yeah.
fun. Yep. And it really like easily growable and scalable, which I think in like if I were making games, I would be like, oh, there's a lot to do there. And we could sell yeah. We could sell an expansion pack 2 years later, like Elden Ring, and everyone would be freaking the fuck out. Yeah. And it works.
Yeah. They have it's loot boxes metal. That are like typewriters, and you smash them open.
Well, you could have a lot of fun too, like if it's self-aware like that. I mean, you know, like the way that Fallout is, and in some extensions, because it feels so much like it, like the Outer Worlds, just mm-hmm. like a little bit,
right,
like
right.
hyper self-aware. That like also of Stephen King's like. Reach and the impact that man has had on things, I feel like you could also pull in so many other things that are inspired by him that would be subtle little nods or outright, you know, like in a perfect world, you'd get Sam Lake on and he'd be like, fuck yeah, we're going to also have an Alan Wake section.
Yeah.
We'll do a whole Alan Wake section.
Well, it'd be really fun to like have the big reveal being that you're in a new Stephen King story, and like and then that gets really into that Alan Wake headiness of who's writing what, and you know, at what point is this something that the author wrote? Is this something else wrote? You know, and you can actually even have Stephen King in it at a certain point.
I was going to say, is he the final
hell
boss?
Hell yeah.
And you find out he's just yes, fucking yeah, with you the entire game.
He's got to be.
And then, give me then like you're... an in the mouth of madness ass crazy final.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you've yeah. got to have like a family or good friends that are with you that are murdered like brutally. And then when you realize that King is the one that orchestrated it because it's better for the story, then you get a little bit of the creation fighting the creator at the end, for sure. That's definitely the ending, is fighting Stephen King.
Yeah, I mean,
final
it.
Boss Stephen King.
Yeah. Sold. Legally impossible
so
to make this game.
Already.
Don't get mad at me, Stephen King, but is this final version of Stephen King you're fighting coked out Stephen King or not coked out Stephen King?
It depends. That. If we're set in the 80s, it's kind of, well, no, it's set in the 80s, but he's writing now. So it's going to be, you're going to feel really bad about it because it's going to be old man Stephen King writing.
Oh, no. Yeah. At the end, he's like, just kill me.
Yeah, but then, you know, then he can keep writing. He's like, bam, you know, guess what? Fucking Pennywise is protecting me now. Boom. You know, because he's a writer. He can create the stuff, and you got to work your way through all the bosses to get to him. You know,
he looks like a big puppet master, like looming.
It's like kaiju size.
Yeah.
Then you finally get to him, and he's just like a 6 foot, you know, 3 skinny dude sitting behind a typewriter.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That'd be sick.
You instead of like those like like the what the fuck slimes, that's what they're called in Zelda, the big blue fucking, you know, you could have the Langoliers running around.
Throw some Langoliers. He throws the little gremlin dude that lives in the wall and Cat's Eye at you.
Shit.
That'd be fun.
You corner him, and then he types something up real quick, and suddenly he's in the motorized silver bullet wheelchair, and he zooms away, and you have to catch him. You have to get him later. Yeah.
It would be great to have, like, you know, fuck you money, like hundreds of billions of dollars, and just hire a team to make this for you. Like, I don't care what it costs. I don't care how long it takes. Just get it done, and, you know, I'll write you a check.
It's like those, like, oil-rich, like, Saudi princes that, like, pay Warhammer or whatever to give them an exclusive overpowered gun or some or weapon that's only in their game. Yeah, that one of one, only one exists, and they paid, like, $10 million for it.
Because I think it would be legally impossible to make this game. Like, because you would have to have the rights to all the fucking characters, and, you know, those are spread out about God knows how many, like, production companies and...
I don't know. You just got to call up Epic. How the fuck did they get all that for Fortnite?
Yeah,
that's a good question.
Just whoever's Epic's lawyer, be like, listen, we're getting you on
payroll
for our Stephen King game. I need you to get me all of these people. And he's like, I got you Darth Vader. And you're like, no. I said Stephen King only.
So no kid Leroy. I don't want Kid Leroy in my game.
Right.
No Mr. Beast either. All right. So Scott, what do you got?
Oh, fucking, I don't like that guy. Oh. He's terrifying to me. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, we write about him all the time. I'm aware. You saw the last thing that we wrote about how he was like, I was going to Walmart's and demanding I go into the back room to check stock for my chocolate bars. I was like, imagine if this fucking guy walked in when I was working at Barnes and Noble in 2003 and was like,
no shit.
Okay, can you check the back room? I'd be like, dude. Box is all the way up above my head that's like full of magazines and E.L. James books. Like, I'm not going in there right now just to see if your fucking chocolate bars are here.
I think it was another Kotaku writer I saw on, I think it was on Twitter, saying that the problem with Mr. Beast, like pictures of him, is he's always smiling, but his eyes are not smiling.
Mm-hmm. And no, they're dead.
They're dead. Like, fucking, like, and once I noticed it, I was like, oh, that's exactly why I have this, like, super unsettled feeling every time that mug goes through my feed. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I don't like that. Yeah,
it's that, and then that guy is also the same guy who's like, I've locked people in a box for a chance to win $1 million. And I'm like, what kind of sick fucking jigsaw-ass man are you?
Yeah, he's got to be the host.
Give them the money.
He's got to be the host of Edgar Wright's Running Man. That's what's got to happen when he makes that event.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea. okay, so here's mine.
Yes.
And please. I feel like mine isn't... Man, I'm feeling like maybe mine wasn't the on and on, because like now that I've heard both of y'all's, I don't feel like mine is nearly as fleshed out. But what I'm imagining...
We'll flesh it out together.
Very well. What I'm imagining is picture Final Fantasy IV. You know what that looks like? Super Nintendo era, you know, pixelated graphics and shit.
Right.
It is a RPG with like the fucking turn-based combat in it, right? Huh. And it is based on It. And your party is made up of members of the Losers Club. That, you know, you got to put your team together, you know, so I don't know, let's say Bill has to, like, first he's got to collect his party together, right? And so that involves encounters along the way with, you know, minor It villains or, you know, instances of Pennywise. Then you all have to
shitty adults.
Yes. And then you the game takes you all over Derry. So there's like, you know, there's the movie theater and the arcade. There's the rock quarry. There's and the barons. There's like fucking. Well, obviously there's the sewers. That's like the big dungeon level in this right. game that you have to get through. And ultimately, you know, Pennywise is like the final boss. But I think I specifically want it to have that retro look to it. Like not a new, like, you know, AAA fucking, we had a huge right. budget to make this look amazing game. I think it would just be really fun to play a version of it that looks like that.
Yeah, I can see
that
it.
That would be kind of fucking sick. Imagine it's like a Nintendo Switch game.
Yeah.
Nintendo has to be okay with you publishing.
And like, so each of the, I guess each of the losers would have to have like a special power in combat. Mm-hmm. And I guess we can crib those from like when they confront Pennywise. And like, so one of them's got the fucking asthma inhaler that he can use against him.
Right.
What else? What am I forgetting? Everything.
The slingshot with the silver yep. slugs in it.
Right.
Like Bill could be like the leader or whatever. So he doesn't do as much damage, but he inspires the others. You know, he fucking could Richie could use his comedy.
He could ghost ride his bicycle into Pennywise silver.
Yeah.
Could be like one of his special powers.
Yep. Yeah. Richie could use his comedy to put him down, as we know is the ultimate weapon against Pennywise is to bully him, I guess. I don't know. Ben can use his big boy tackle. He could be a tackle guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously,
would you have Beb's this one be with co-op? Shot? Like, let other people play with you, or it would just yep. be you pick your... Yeah.
It would be cool if, like, you can have, like... I like the co-op idea because then you're, like, you're picking your characters, but then you also then have to divide up the rest of the club to pick for their turns in, uh-huh. in order, you know? And so then there's some strategy there of like, well, we have to use Stan's reciting the birds or whatever to distract Pennywise here. And then we can, Bill can buff everybody and then Bev takes her shot and, you know, like you can strategize your things where I can feel it, where you can have a little bit of fun with it. Like how the Stick of Truth, the South Park mm-hmm. games, the turn-based yeah. games are, where they get kind of goofy and silly, but they're also really like grounded in real strategy for these kind of things.
Right.
Like, I don't know. You can have a lot of fun with it, I think.
And for the like random enemy encounters in the world,
yeah.
you know, you would run across Henry Bowers and the boys, obviously,
mm.
you know, there could, you would also have like the evil, various evil adults, in Derry, maybe in Bev's level, you've got to avoid her father. Or Stan's overbearing mother is chasing him around, like throughout the level,
right.
Or whatever his particular level is. But each of the characters' levels would be, you know, just based on the individual encounters they have with Pennywise in the book, right? So
yeah,
you know, that's.
Standpipe level would be pretty cool.
Yeah, you get a little yeah. mini boss at the end of each one that's like
the knee bolt,
the fucking Bowser. Werewolf, the leper, you know, all that shit.
Yeah.
Wait, this is actually sick.
Yeah.
It's tight.
And then
yeah.
Yeah, and then you get the party together, but this is the part that's kind of tripping me up because like that feels like the first third of the game and then I guess maybe it's the first half and then the second half is going to get Pennywise as a group. But like, I'm not sure story wise what we're doing once we get the party together between that moment and the final boss fight with Pennywise. Like, I'm not sure what else to do with the characters as once they're as a party. You know, I guess there'll be a level with the rock fight, you know, against, you know, Henry and the yeah. other bullies and shit. But it needs a little bit more. Y'all got any ideas?
Do you want it to time jump or do you want it to just stay bully kid?
I was really just thinking, you know, we could save that for the sequel. But
yeah, yeah.
I suppose it could. But like to me, the miniseries iteration of it and both of the movies, I think, fail to make the adult counterparts all those scenes just aren't as interesting as the scenes with the kids, I find. Like, I don't really care about spending time with the adults in this game. And I think having it look like a game I remember playing from my childhood kind of speaks to it being like you're playing as kids. Like, I don't want to sneak right now, like, little sprite versions of, like, you know, a fucking grown-up Bill Denbrow or something, you know?
Yeah.
You know what you could do is you could realize that you have to defeat all of the Pennywise apparitions before you can flush Pennywise himself out. Mm-hmm. So that means you have to, you know, go and defeat the leper. You have to go, like, you know, essentially cross off sections on the map. We beat the Niebolt house. We beat, you know, this. Right. We got rid of Henry Bowers. We got, you know, we're over here now. And then, like, we're dealing with, like, the undead versions of the kids that he's killed already.
I like that.
You know, like, so you can, like, do all this, like, the barons are clear. Maybe the barons are the last one to clear, and that's when the sewer grate or whatever, the thing that leads into the sewer is, like, becomes apparent, going, all right, now here's time for the final shit. And my question to you, is there, like, a secret door, like in Doom or something, where you go up to a wall in the sewer where you open it up, and then you then, if you find the secret door, you get to do the train mission?
Yeah, that's this game's version. That's this game's version of Rockstar's hot coffee controversy.
I wasn't gonna bring it up, but I was curious what the plan was.
It's like a mini game where
it's like Dig Dug.
Like no, like Guitar Hero. Like it's like a rhythm game. Oh boy. Maybe we shouldn't leave that one in. I don't know.
Oh my god.
Obviously that will be in this game. This game will be appropriate for children and not, you know.
Yes.
You know.
It'll just have murdered kids in it. They won't be doing it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, they won't be messing around. They'll just be dying.
Right.
Perfectly acceptable. Perfectly fine. But yeah, I mean, this sounds fun as fuck, and I can definitely see this being something that if they put, like, you're talking about, like, this 32-bit, you know, kind of graphics, right? It's like, I can see them doing that, because they did something similar with Stranger Things, where they're, like, they made, like, a little 16-bit version of it or whatever. It just feels, if you're going to set it in the 80s, which you probably should be doing, I know the novel's set in the 50s for this era, but, you know, if they did that for it and it's Pennywise that you're fighting, that would be something that would be like 100, you know, million downloads on Steam kind of shit. Like,
easily.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know, people.
I think that this is probably the smartest and most executable idea that's been floated.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, cheapest to make for sure. Yeah.
But do you think that people, like, would complain? Because it's like, I can't imagine such a game actually being scary. Do you think that people would complain about an It game that just is straight up not scary? That is, in fact, more cute than scary.
No, I don't know. I think maybe I would say that those people lack imagination, because sometimes things that are really cute are scary.
Here, I'll tell you, one of the scariest games that's ever been made is still to this day the original NES Friday the 13th game, because when Jason shows up, you're fucked. It's just like, it just becomes a random, like, hopefully going into this cabin doesn't mean I spawn Jason, because I'm pretty much fucked if he shows up. Like, there are certain times you can hit him enough that he'll go away. 9 times out of 10, he fucking doesn't, and you're just dead, and every progress you've made is gone. So maybe there could be, like, a Pennywise random encounter that you can have, where if you're, like, off by yourself, like, as one of these
kids, don't know what's going to happen.
That if you explore too much, yes, you can explore and get stuff that'll help you in the fight, but if you do it too much, each one's a roll of the dice, a Pennywise showing up and being, like, almost an instant game over, you know? Then that would...
I do like that.
That could give you a little bit of that scared, like, nervous, tense feel.
Yeah, it doesn't have to look scary to be scary, especially, if you've got these kinds of, like, if you feel like there's a clock ticking and you don't know when it's going to stop, that inherently freaks people out, even if it looks cutesy and colorful.
Right.
And you're like, fuck, 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 fuck. you know, an entire playthrough. That's fun. I like that.
Yeah, yeah, I like the I do like the idea of what I'm thinking of right now is you ever play Clock Tower with the fucking the guy with the scissors?
Oh my God, no.
Chases you around.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the original version of that was, you know, pretty by modern standards, pretty janky looking, but like that was fucking scary as shit, that game. For the same reason that you're talking about with the Friday the 13th thing.
I don't know what form of there to bring the tension that you'd be missing from having like a super polished, like modern looking game. And you can do that in gameplay, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's three solid fucking ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely different.
Yeah.
We've really outdone ourselves this time, folks. You know.
Yeah, let's pat each other on
the back. All three of these are getting made. I'm sure of it.
100%. I can stop writing about games and start making games. I'll become the next weird, like, head of a game studio that everyone deifies, and I show up at the Game Awards. Everybody freaks out.
Yeah, they deify you, and then they hate you, like, within 36 hours.
I get to put, like, Lady Gaga in my game.
Lady Gaga is Pennywise.
You know she would do that shit,
Lady
too.
Lady Gaga probably is Jack Torrance.
She'd probably do that, too. I think she'd up for any challenge.
She would. Mad respect and love. I love that woman so much, but she don't say no to a lot of things.
Lady Gaga is Cujo in Castle Rock. Oh, no.
I'm in. Again, we just got to call Epic up. They got her in their game. They can get us all the rights to all the Stephen King things, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, this was a good deal of fun. Alyssa, thank you for being here today. This is typically the point in the show where we turn it over to our guests and allow you to tell people where they can find you, where to read you it, where you work. Just tell them the fucking web address. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, first, I'm honored to have been here. This is very exciting. I got very excited just to even chat with you guys. And this is super cool and a feather in my cap. I will never take out. You can read a lot of things that I edit and some things that I write at kotaku.com. Don't ask why it's called Kotaku. None of us picked that name. But it's kotaku.com. But you can also find me on the cursed Elon Musk app at Alyssa_Merk. Alyssa Mercante, pretty much everywhere. Although someone has taken Alyssa Merk without an underscore everywhere, and I can't figure out who.
Son of a bitch.
It. But yeah.
It's Wampler.
That's me. Yeah. I'm usually posting gym pics on Twitter or talking about Twister, because I fucking love that movie so much.
Yeah, you wrote a thing about that, didn't you? I read that.
Twister made me want to be a storm chaser, and then I went to school, and they were like, "You have to do math." And I was like, "Oh, never mind."
No. I just wanted to drive a truck into a tornado. You don't understand.
Yeah, can I just wear a wife beater like Helen Hunt and stand on top of a truck? Like, that's easy, right? They're like, "No, you have to know math." I'm like, "Forget it. I guess I'll become a fucking writer." Never mind.
Well, maybe in another life. But thank you for being here today. Tell Big Mike we said hello, and do come back if we can. If you ever have any ideas, you know, let us know.
You'll hear from me. Okay. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Many thanks to Alyssa Mercante for joining us on yet another one of these format-breaking episodes. I hope you guys like these as much as we do.
Yes.
I don't know if you could tell just listening to it. We get a little more excited. We're like, oh, we're doing something a little bit outside the box here. So.
Breaking format is good. And to provide a little peek behind the curtain here, we recorded this as a bonus episode like fucking forever ago. And it would have gone up then on the Patreon, but we wrapped that recording and got off the line. And I called Vespi, I think, and was just like, I don't know. I think that one's, you know, not that any of the episodes on our Patreon aren't strong enough for the main feed,
right,
but this one was particularly spirited, and it's been a minute since we've done one of these format breaking episodes. Yeah. So Plus, like, all that shit with her dad, I was like, I kind of want her dad to hear this. Right. So we've been waiting for it to pop up in its queue in the main feed, and it's here now. And we hope y'all had as much fun with that as we did recording it.
Yeah, for sure. So we have another spirited episode coming up next week, which I'm really excited for everybody to listen to. Do you want to tell them a little bit about it, or do you want me to?
We rang up our old pal Alon Gale. Alon hasn't been on the show in a while, and he has such a dryly funny sense of humor that I just love talking to this guy and throwing things at him and seeing what comes back. He is consistently surprising in the shit that he will respond with. And he's been on the show several times. This is the reality TV show producer who worked on The Bachelor. He created F-Boy Island. He's worked with another frequent guest of ours, Mike Flanagan, on a number of projects, up to and including the forthcoming Life of Chuck. And we just wanted to hear from him. So I hit him up and he was like, all right, well, what story am I going to do? And it turned out he had never seen The Langoliers. Mm. And I was very curious to see what Alon would have to say about The Langoliers. And that's also one I don't need to rewatch anytime soon. So, of course, it was a yes. And he will be joining us next week to provide us with what I thought was a very surprising take on The Langoliers. I was not prepared for his, reaction to this. Do you think that's fair to say? Were you surprised?
Yeah, no, I don't want to tip the hand of how his reaction was, which direction it went, but he did have a very strong reaction to the story. He had a strong reaction to the miniseries, and there's even a delightful part where Wampler throws out a hypothetical at some point. And it, instead of it going like, oh, that's kind of fun, I'm gonna roll with it, he instead chooses to act as your therapist and go, well, what does this say about you? And suddenly there's like this, is this rollicking
yourself
weird, you were talking about, you know, meatballs with teeth that eat time and shit, and then suddenly it turns into this like, no, I'm really gonna challenge you on your stance on this. It's probably my favorite part of the show, and I can't wait for everybody to listen to it.
I was surprised that was his reaction, but I also knew that's why I asked.
Yeah.
Because I knew he would have a reaction to that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it would be, but yeah, he fucking Alon always delivers, man. Yeah. Love to talk to that guy.
And then this Friday, we have a bonus episode, as we do every Friday, over on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/thekingcast. I guess we're going to be shifting gears a little bit. We haven't recorded it yet, but we are going from a rollicking fun talk about airplanes that fly through rips in time and space. We're moving from that topic to talking about insomnia, which covers some, you know, very low key issues like abortion and apparently the HIV epidemic of the era. And Scott, do you want to fill us in on who our guest is to talk about that?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know this guest's real name. Yeah. If they have told me their real name, I have forgotten it. And that is only because my brain is Swiss cheese, but also smooth like an egg. I feel like I will just say that it is someone who is a regular listener of the show who's been following us forever. She's an active member on our Discord. We've been very reluctant to bring on any listeners onto the show. It's just, it's one of those things where it's a fucking liability issue. You don't know what someone's going to say. You might get an hour into a recording with somebody you think is totally normal, and then they're going to be like, they start dropping racial slurs. And like, then what are we going to, and then we got to eat the whole episode and have a conversation with them about their racism. You just don't know, because you can't vet them like you could vet a known quantity, a celebrity or a personality, right?
Yeah.
But some of our longest listeners and some of the people on our Discord are really interesting and really have unique angles on some of the stuff we talk about. And I think they've kind of proved themselves over time to be, you know, worth talking to, at least, and worth giving a shot to on the air, and we'll see what happens. But I'm very excited to talk to this guest, and this is such a weird story, and these are such heady topics that I think it's going to create for, you know, an interesting recording, and we'll be doing that very soon.
Yeah, no, it's Insomnia is an interesting book. So it's going to be, it's always fun. It's a little bit of a minefield, but it's always fun to kind of dip our toes into those waters. And there's like lots of Dark Tower shit in there. It's going to be a lot of fun, as our bonus episodes usually are. So again, if you're not signed up, head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/thekingcast. Sign up, throw us a few bucks, and we make it worth your while. All right, so I guess we'll see everybody back in the main feed next week for some Langoliers talk with Mr. Alon Gale.
See you then, folks. Adios.
Bye.
The KingCast is a Fangoria podcast production. The show is produced, hosted, and created by Eric Vespi, that's me, and Scott Wampler. Tira Ansley and Abhi Goel are executive producers. Daniel Danger is our art director, and editing is done by yours truly.